This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
And the old gang is back together. It's just Michael and Don. Peter's taking a couple of well-deserved days off, but Don, this is the way God meant it to be. Let's be honest.
Just the way it was all put together. We do appreciate every effort that is made by Peter, or lack of effort at times. But this is how it all started. This is how it all began.
This is the way it's going to end someday. Anyway, you know what? 6 months from today happens to be 6 months.
All right. So we are right now. That would be December, Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah.
Do you think the world will be different at Christmas, or will we still be having the same issues?
I think we'll be still having the same issues. I can't imagine if there's no vaccine, which it doesn't sound like the best case scenario is still after Christmas, right?
Well, Fauci said by the end of the year. So,
but by the time you the distribution and all that, I mean, I would think that it's going to be a very funky Christmas.
Amazon will be getting a lot of calls from Santa.
They're getting a lot of calls anyway. I mean, that's how I do most of my shopping, so it probably won't make much of a difference anyway. But I don't know. I'm still seesawing over this whole thing about, like, where we're at. I mean, I feel really good about where we are in the tri-state area as the numbers seem to be going down. But now when we're restarting, are the numbers going to spike back up? And are all these sports going to happen?
It's amazing when you see the graphs that they have in all the newspapers and on social media, where every country in the world, the graph is down. It's flattened. Everyone except us. And I said this at the beginning when we all started it. This is a country where people, thankfully, embrace their individual freedoms. And we have individual freedoms that we don't have around the world.
Right.
We just don't. And I think in other authoritarian governments, when they say you stay home and you wear a mask, they stay home and they wear a mask and they don't ask any questions. And then you get here where people actually are fighting wearing a mask because it's a fight against their individual freedom. And I laugh at that. It's to protect other people. I was thinking about if I could parallel it at all. It's like you're not allowed to drink and drive. Now, if you lived alone in the desert and you wanted to get loaded and get behind a car and wrap the car around a pole, it's your life. The reason you're not allowed to drink and drive is for other people. Isn't that an individual freedom? But, I mean, we are a civilized society. So if you could stop other people from getting sick by wearing a damn mask, you see the things that, I mean, I saw that thing down in Florida where that woman was talking. I mean, it made my head spin. There are people out there that look at this as an affront to their freedom to wear a damn mask.
But that just shows you just how ridiculously free we are, that the slightest inconvenience, we just flip out. We're like children that way, right? I mean, it's like Marco and Jalen. It's like the second I take something away from them, they start bawling their eyes out until they get it back. You think we get better as we got older? We get worse. Now, listen, I understood, and I still understand the guy that owns a gym out there that thought that he was going to be able to open up, and now he's not going to be able to open up until maybe next month, and he's losing money, and he's hemorrhaging from the eye. I get that. Like, I get all that, and I feel bad for them, and I thank my lucky stars, as do you, every day that I still have a job and I'm able to work. And a lot of people can't, so I get that. But the mask thing, as inconvenient, as uncomfortable as it is, you're not even willing to do that. I mean, come on.
And it's proof positive what's happening around the country. The people that the areas where they're fighting wearing masks are spiking. Why is that so hard to understand?
And the masks, I don't think, are going to go away for a long time. And I was thinking about this, Michael. Like,
it might be the new normal. Even when there is a vaccine, you might not get the flu if you wore a mask.
Right. So come flu season, even when we get a vaccine or whatever, like, why not? We have them. They're available now. Wear them. They're uncomfortable. They're a pain in the neck, especially in the summer. You know, when you're trying to wear your glasses, for people that have glasses or you have the sunglasses on and they fog up. I understand the inconvenience, but you know what? It's a lot better than getting the darn thing, right? So, God, we can't even do that. As a country, we can't even be united on that front.
It's amazing. We're so divided, and you know, we're not going to get into politics or anything like that, but I can't believe that the health of a nation is predicated on your political beliefs. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's insulting. We're better than this, people, because, you know, such stringent things that they put down in New York and Connecticut and Jersey, don't you see the result? The result is better. The result is better. And then, you know, you get guys like, you see in Rolling Stone today, Sammy Hagar said, you know, we can't kill the economy. I'd rather die than and leave a good economy for my children. Not me. I'd rather the economy crater so I could live and my family could live. And you know what? We'll build up from it. I don't want businesses to go out of business either. But and then you see the guy who did John Fogerty, I think. He said, I'm not going to give my life for the economy. He said, I'm not going to do shows until it's safe for people to go.
We're just talking about a temporary fix here. And I get the economic situation of it. And listen, I'll do anything for my kids. I would die for my kids. There's no question about that. But for the time being,
you would die for your kids to have a good economy.
Not for a good economy. Listen, that's important because I think a lot of lives could be lost with a bad economy. But can we try to figure out ways? We paused it for 3 months and it was devastating for a lot of people. But, you know, losing more life could be devastating too. So you try to do the best of both worlds. You try to build back up, which we are. We're starting to see things happen, and it's been rough for everybody. I understand that, but you know, to stay alive, I think, has got to be first and foremost on everybody's mind.
And the one quick thing, businesses should be opened back up. But then you see the guy that was walking into a Walmart without a mask, and he got aggressive. And I feel sorry for the people that are working at close to minimum wage, right? And there are now laws that you must wear masks in certain stores. And these poor guys and gals have to enact those laws? They have to fight with customers that think it's an affront to their freedom to wear a mask? It's sad. Those are not the people that should be enacting this. There should be hired security guards to do that, not the poor guy at Walmart or at Target. That's ridiculous to put them in that situation. And that thing where that Karen lady at a donut shop, the people behind the counter, they're kids. They're gonna tell you got to wear a mask. The whole thing is bass ackwards. It doesn't make sense. Those are not the people that should be enforcing this.
But these are laws, people. Do you think I agree with every law? Right? And so what if I, when I was 18 years old, Michael said, you know what, I think the drinking age should be 18, not 21. So I'm just going to defiantly try to walk into a bar and demand to be served or go. No, there's laws. You just got, that's the way that it is.
And individual freedoms are actually, you know, curtailed somewhat by laws. You're right. I mean, if you're 15 years old, you can't drink.
Right. Even if you want to. Even if your parents say it's okay. And even if you do it at home. Sorry, you can't go out and do a bar. You're not allowed in. You got to be 21. That's just the way that it is. You got to be 17 to drive a car in New Jersey. I wanted to drive a car when I was 12. I couldn't get in a car, drive around, and just tell the officer that pulled me over, sorry, I'm 5 years from my driver's license, but I don't care. It's a free country, and I should be allowed to drive. So, yeah, I'm not telling you to agree with it. If you disagree with it, if it's not your thing, fine. But unfortunately, these are the rules, and you got to abide by the rules sometimes. Is it that difficult?
I guess it is. Just look at the graphs. It's difficult in Texas. It's difficult in Arizona. It's difficult in Florida. It's difficult for people. It's difficult for people in this area as well. But look at the graphs. Don't you want to stay healthy?
Yeah, when you saw the stat from, what was that, a month ago, where like 66% of the new infected people were from home, and that the frontliners, it was like 12%, which like that was proof positive that the PPE worked. That the people that wear masks and gloves and do their due diligence, they're going to be safer than the people who just want to go live their life. So wear a mask, please.
All right, let's climb down from our soapbox, because I'm sure that we have a lot of people that love the show that are saying, these two guys are idiots. I'm not wearing it. Okay, you do what you want to do. Don't infect me, because I'll come after you. I will. I just will. Don't
this
infect my
over.
Kids. I'll be all over it if I ever find out that somebody didn't wear a mask, infected my kids. I'd go crazy. Anyway, we'll talk some sports. So Greg Williams, and we talked about him yesterday, the defensive coordinator of the Jets, who I mean, whether you like his style or not, and we all know what he did in New Orleans. I mean, he was suspended for a year for his involvement in Bounty Gate. But the guy's a great defensive coach, a great defensive mind. And he's the first Jet official that has spoken about Jamal Adams. And you know what? He came out in support of him. Not support that he should get his contract, but he didn't say one bad thing about Jamal. Let me give you some of the quotes. All right, so he spoke to reporters today, and he said, "You never, ever mess with a guy's contract, but I've got his back on those types of things. He has to get all that stuff settled, so now, boom, get back into our setting, and now we're ready to roll." He knows that. He goes on to say, "I think the world of him. I've had a chance to coach a lot of really good players, some already in the Hall of Fame, many others who are going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to have a legitimate chance, staying healthy, to be one of those guys that we're all talking about." Goes on to say, "I want him to feel good about everything that's going on. He knows when he gets inside the door and inside the white lines, there's a chemistry that's outstanding. I've been through this before with other players. You can't get too emotional. I can't. I've got to stay level-headed with that and just know that I can't wait to get a chance to coach him again. He has to handle his contract. He'll do all that kind of stuff. He's doing those things. We always have to have the next man up philosophy. I'm hoping everything goes well. I love coaching him, and I've got his back." Now, some might interpret that, Don, and say, "Well, that doesn't help the Jets." That's not what Williams is doing here. A position coach. Now, he's not quite his position coach, but he's a defensive coordinator.
Right, yeah.
You got to back up your players. Because at some point when he's back in camp, if Williams threw him under the bus, that would not be good for the team. And it would not be good for that relationship. And obviously that would spill over into not being good when it comes to wins and losses. I think Williams did the exact right thing. He complimented the guy. And this is right along the lines of everything the Jets have said, Don. Because bottom line, the GM of the team said, "I want him to be a Jet for life." But Adams is acting somewhat petulantly, trying to get himself traded, doing everything in power to get himself traded, but the Jets have all the power at this point. It does change when they report at the end of July into camp. Is he going to be there? If he's not there, then he loses a year anyway. And if he is there, is he going to be a pain in the backside? That's when some of it shifts to him. But right now, Don, I give the Jets total A grades right across the line for how they've handled this.
Yep.
They don't even seem like they're sweating it.
And we haven't heard from Gase postseason, but we had him on during the season. And whenever we really nudged Gase. We really went after him about the social media stuff and things that Adams had said publicly. And Gase always had his back, right? He always downplayed it. You know, some of it was a little fugazi with, "Oh, I don't pay attention to social media." But we still, there were at least two or three times, at least I remember, where we pressed him on Jamal Adams and how he felt about some of that, and he wouldn't bite. So publicly, I can't answer for what's happening behind the scenes, but publicly, the Jets have said all the right things, and publicly, Jamal Adams has said all the wrong things as far as the relationship with the Jets. I cannot imagine Jamal Adams being able to say anything negative about how the Jets have handled this other than not giving him the money that he demands, which is a ridiculous amount of money. So that shouldn't even be on the table for discussion. He's not getting $20 million. That's ridiculous to even ask for it.
From anybody.
But for him to think that the Jets have done him wrong publicly, they haven't. The only thing is he just doesn't want to be here. Now the question is why. Greg Williams talks about him glowingly. Gase didn't kill him. Douglas hasn't killed him. So what is it? Is it Gase because he's like the X factor and not believing that the team's any good because Gase doesn't have a lot of experience winning? Is it because he blames Gase for not addressing the contract because he's looked upon as the guy that's actually in charge of this organization? Or is it really nobody, just the fact is the Jets aren't close to winning yet and he's impatient? I think it's probably the latter. And it's easy to get the message out that Gase is the problem, because if you poll Jet fans, what's the biggest question mark about your team? They're probably going to say the coach.
Right.
So he's playing a big PR game, going after the right people to try to win public opinion, because he just does not want to be here. Period.
And I will tell you what I've told all of our listeners over the last 3 days. Because I did make phone calls. I know Don did as well. The Jets aren't sweating this. If you think the Jets are calling meetings to talk about Jamal Adams, you're wrong. They have not extended one bit of man hour on his demands because they have no intention of trading him. If they're not working the phones to get him out of there. Joe Douglas has said publicly that he takes phone calls on everybody, and that's kind of what started Jamal Adams getting his nose out of joint last year. But they're not sweating it. If you think the Jets are sweating this, you're dead wrong. They are not. They have not expended one bit of anxiety on this guy. I mean, there are other things to worry about. This guy has no leverage at this point, and he won't even have leverage other than to be a pain in the backside once camp starts. There's no leverage there. They have him under control for 3 years. Do you want to pay him? Do you want to make this stop? Yes. Maybe they could give him a bridge contract where his contract is a little bit more palatable this year rather than 3.6. That could be in the works. Who knows? But just the read that we get of Joe Douglas, he doesn't suffer fools gladly. He is a guy who has courage of his convictions. He draws a line in the sand and goes, this is what this guy is worth. Look what he did with Robbie Anderson. They wanted Robbie Anderson back. But he put his contract, I'm going to pay this guy $10 million. That's it. That's what he's worth. And then the Panthers gave him $22 million, and the first year was $12. Just $2 million difference from what the Jets offered. Jets said no. The line was 10, and that's it. And they probably have a line in the sand for what they want with Jamal Adams. But they're not going to trade him 60 cents on a dollar. They're too smart for that. This guy, I think the Jets got it right with Joe Douglas. I could be dead wrong. Just a feel that he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. And I think in this case, he holds all the cards. The only thing that Jamal Adams holds is the ability to not play. And if he decides this year, I'm going to be a real pain. My back is going to act up. Mike Tannenbaum brought that up when he was on with us. That's okay, too. If you lose a $3.6 million player, not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
That's not going to help Jamal Adams. It's not going to help his marketability. If he sits out the entire season, he's going to be the one who looks bad. That's a year out of his career. He'll never get back. And the Jets will be none the worse for it. $3.6 million, not a big deal for a team to lose.
Right. Now you go into 2021 where his raise will now get him, what, the $9 million?
Nine to 10, yeah, something like that.
Now that can be a little bit of a problem, but here's the thing. Even though I believe the Jets are still a work in progress, it's not out of the realm of possibility that this team might compete and have a fun season. Right? Quarterback stays healthy. Mosley comes back from his injury. No Tom Brady in the division. Is it crazy to think that a 7-9 team with a quarterback that missed almost half the season, with your number one acquisition of free agency missing pretty much the entire season, that the Jets couldn't maybe be a 9-7 team this year? Go from 7-9 to 9-7, 8-8? And then how would that look if he ends up playing the injury game and doesn't really play this year and the Jets actually get better?
Oh, then he loses all leverage.
No, then he's going to probably want to play, right? Because then it's going to be, oh, well, look at the team's good. Imagine with me going, and then the Jets could be like, oh, well, okay, you can play, but guess what? You know, we were maybe thinking of giving you a raise, but now you're going to have to play with the $9.5 million, and now we might even franchise you the next year. So the Jets have all the cards, and I don't know what Jamal is planning on doing, but if he wants to make a fool of himself and rip the team while they're going on and losing his teammates and showing a lack of leadership and faking injuries, is that going to be something that a lot of teams are going to pay a high price for? As good as he is, Michael, in the football world, is he that good where somebody not only is going to want to give up picks for him, but then eventually pay him?
I think he's damn good. I'm not going to lie. He's great. He's great. But at that position, do you move the needle enough? I mean, everybody's talking about the sacks that he gets. Well, he gets the sacks because of the way Greg Williams utilizes him. Would another team utilize him the same way? Would they allow him to play a hybrid safety linebacker kind of position? Who knows? But he was successful before Greg Williams got there, too. He's a really, really fine player. I think he borders on great. I think he's the best at what he does in the NFL. Now we got to get a price. And why do we have to get the price now? If you look at all the draft picks that are allowed to ask for a renegotiation after 3 years, they're great players that never got it. Patrick Mahomes still hasn't gotten it, and he's done way more for the Kansas City Chiefs than Jamal Adams, and he's waiting patiently on his contract. Jamal just doesn't seem like he has any patience.
But is it lack of patience? Or is he just looking, I just don't want to be here? And the question is, why does he not
want to be here? If they paid him, he'll be here.
Right, but if they pay him, and that's why he's asking for like $20 million. So he's like, yeah, I'll play here if you're going to give me just an astronomical amount of money. But if you're just going to pay me as the highest price safety, which is $4.6 million, so if they give him $15, he's going to scoff at it, which would still make him the highest price safety, which I think is fair because he's the best safety. But I want to go deeper into what's his problem with the Jets. Like, is it just because they haven't won? What is his deal? Why does he not want to be a part of this team? Forget about the guys that drafted you or the coach from before. It's a new regime. You went 7-9. You were 7-1 in the second half of the season. I still think that the jury's out, but why is he in such a belief that this team doesn't have a future, that he doesn't want to be here that badly?
Weird. It's just, I don't know if we'll ever find out.
What could his relationship with Gase be? Gase is an offensive guy. What are his dealings with him that he would have a problem with him?
Maybe he just doesn't like the culture, but I think Gase is setting up a pretty good culture. One thing you got to say for Gase, although I don't put that much credence in the way they finished, if most teams that started off the way the Jets did last year, even if they had an amazingly soft schedule in the second half, they would just pack it in. That team did not pack it in on Adam Gase. That's a significant sign that he has not lost that team.
If he had lost
that team, they would have lost a lot of those games.
From an X's and O's standpoint, I think the jury is still out on exactly how good or great a coach he is. But the one thing you have to say is he didn't lose the room. From a culture standpoint, you're right. If after that start to the season, losses to Cincinnati and Miami that had not won games before they beat the Jets, he could have lost that room and didn't. So it can't be the culture. It must just be, I think they're still a few years away, and I'm not impatient about getting paid. I'm impatient about winning, and he doesn't want to wait to win.
I know. We have to wonder whether there's going to be football or not. We had a doctor on yesterday, Dr. Kaplan, who said that he thinks football is doomed. Just what they do, how they do it, traveling around. They're in each other's face. And he said he doesn't see how they're going to do it. I talked to somebody intimately involved with the NFL last night who said they're doing it. That there's no doubt. But Zeke Elliott spoke out today and said, we've got to have more clarity on this. Malcolm Jenkins, a veteran, pretty much said, we are not an essential business. We should not be playing unless we have more control of this virus around the country. So those are two really, really big players that are expressing a lot of doubt. A lot of people are expressing doubt. I think there's going to be doubt, especially when you see big states like Texas, Florida, Arizona, and California all spiking, homes to many, many, many professional teams. How are you going to do it? How are you going to do it?
You heard Fauci on Monday say, all they can do is recommend. The commissioners are going to do what they want to do. So if Goodell wants to play, they'll play. But I'm beginning to wonder how many players will climb aboard. Like, you're starting to, like, the NHL seems like the players still seem 50-50 on whether they want to vote for this new proposal for the hub. You've heard NBA players complain even after agreeing to the hub. I think you're going to see some baseball players flat out not play. And I think you see that in the NFL too. That if things are bad and family situations, you're just going to have to live, if you're the commissioner of these sports, that not all of your players are going to want to play.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast.
Well, Malcolm Jenkins is now a contributor on CNN while being an active player. This is what he said about playing football this year. Here's Malcolm Jenkins.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate. Where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff, we can't do that. And so we'll end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk. Not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families, I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to a place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
I mean, we talked about this yesterday, Don. I know that it angers you. You know, people should just be responsible. But these are young men who are invincible. Zeke Elliott had it. He said he had very, very few symptoms of any. Kevin Durant seemed like he was asymptomatic. It seems like all the athletes that get it, they're fine. I don't think they think that broadly. Wow, I might give it to somebody who's living with somebody with a compromised situation or an older. I'm telling you, it's going to be hard to keep young, virile athletes away from the night. Well, I'll put it like that.
All right, here's where football has the advantage over a lot of other sports. They control their players better than any other league based on their CBA.
Right.
And because of the shelf life of a football player, they may complain, but at the end of the day, they'll sign at the bottom line because they want to play. So it's incumbent on Goodell to work with the Players Association and Morris Smith, and when they go to play, say, these are the rules for players when they leave the field. And this is what they have to do. They can't go out clubbing. They can't go to parties. They have to social distance. They have to wear masks. Maybe it comes down to, hey, you're gonna have to stay in your home or your apartment, go to practice, go to the games, and that's all you're allowed to do. Period. You cannot see people outside your immediate family. And here, you're gonna have to sign it. And if you do, and if you get sick, you don't get paid. And that's the way you have to do. Because if they're not going to listen, then you have to make them listen. You have to make a part of the rules. That's why it infuriates me, Michael, because be irresponsible all you want, but your irresponsibility is now going to possibly bring down the entire league. You heard Fauci on Monday. It's not so much concern for the players. It's the players then spreading the virus and keeping this thing alive.
Yeah, the players, I mean, let's be honest, the players, it's infinitesimal that they would get really ill. They'll be fine. These are the top, and now there are some players that have diabetes, they have some players that have beaten cancer, so they have underlying conditions, and they have to make decisions by themselves. But I think that the NBA, once they get all their players into that bubble, and the NHL, once they get their players to the hub, or the two hubs, they got a chance. Baseball traveling, football traveling, I mean, good luck. I hope it works out because there are so many people that need jobs, and it's not just the players that I'm talking about. People in the broadcasting business, in the newspaper business, and the people that, you know, even clean the stadiums and things. I mean, people need jobs. We need to work. I want it to work. But as the doctor said yesterday, Dr. Kaplan said the NFL is doomed. That's what he said. Right. That was his quote. And he said he doesn't see how baseball is going to work. He said there'll be too many people infected at one time to even field the team.
But there were a lot of things he threw out there about his concerns. And one of the concerns is these are young guys that you're not going to be able to control, and they're going to go out and they're going to be irresponsible. To me, that is just inexcusable. That's why I was so angered by it, because it's a multi-million dollar business. There are people counting on one another. They have tracing now, Michael, so they'll be, if they get an infected player, they can trace where he got it. And if we find out he got it at some party, then you have to discipline that player. And you've got to let them know that this is not going to be tolerated.
But you know, this is all going around all over the world. Look what Novak Djokovic did. They had a party.
Right, and we found that out. So if there's some player, right, if player X goes out there and brings down the entire football team because he decided to be irresponsible when a bunch of friends on the off day or the bye week went running around to a bunch of parties down in Miami and got his teammates sick and kept this thing alive, then he has to be disciplined. Yeah, and does he want that on him, that this whole thing went down because he was stupid? It's one thing if it just happens because of circumstances. It happened at the hotel. It happened on the bus on the way to the charter. There's some things that it's just going to happen and you're going to have to live with it. But a lot of these golfers that have gotten sick, they didn't get sick during the tournament. They probably got sick when they went home. Maybe some of them were irresponsible, or somebody was irresponsible and then got them sick.
And you know what's frightening too? So I was reading up on Brooks Koepka, who had a drop out of this weekend's tournament because his caddy tested positive. He didn't. And Brooks Koepka, Don, is like almost anal about keeping he and his crew in a bubble. He rents his own house. He doesn't let them go out during the tournament. Nothing like that. He doesn't even know how this guy got it. So if you do that and it happens, it happens.
Right.
But as you said, if you're going to go crazy, And then it happens. Boy, you got a lot of guilt on your shoulders. You really do.
Right. So if you're Koepka, right, and then you find out through the tracing system that your caddy disobeyed his orders and ran out, went to a party, and got sick, then he's fired. Right. I mean,
the only time that guy left the bubble was to go to a funeral. Maybe that's how he got it.
Right. And listen, and if it turned out, because again, we can now, you know, the tracing, right, where we can now find out where people got it. So these players have to be aware that if you decide to sneak off or stray, then you are going to be punished. Now, how do you punish them? I mean, that has to be collectively bargained. But you have to do that in order to stop it from taking place. I just refuse, as tough as this is to do, Michael, you can't have ignorance be one of the reasons it comes down. It might come down on its own, But you can't have the stupidity of players not following the rules or somebody else not following the rules to bring it all down.
Now, Zeke Elliott was on Twitch TV, and he said safety is obviously very important for the players.
I want to let you guys know, I do hope that we have a season. It has to be right. It has. We got to put the health of the players and the coaches and the support staff first. I think that's important.
Now, Elliott did have the virus. Remember, Elliott had that party with Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, he tested positive, and he was asked how he was feeling.
I'm feeling good. I would say I had maybe one or two days where I felt symptoms. And even then, it wasn't too bad. I had a cough and a little bit of shortness of breath. But now I would say I feel good. I feel normal.
This is a world-class athlete. And he had shortness of breath. And finally, Zeke Elliott, because he's one of the few guys that got his contract after the third year and didn't have to wait till the fourth. He was asked about Jamal Adams. And here's what Zeke said.
Would you like Jamal Adams to be on the Dallas Cowboys?
I would love to have Jamal Adams on the Dallas Cowboys.
Of course.
I would love to.
We want a great defender on our team.
But that decision is above my pay grade. So I'm sorry, I can't help you with that.
There you go. Let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Daniel in Huntington.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Don, too. How are you, man?
Good, man. Thanks. Everything's going all right.
Good. Good, good. That's the way I like to hear it. Listen, Michael, you're getting my hopes up. I've been trying to keep these hopes down since Aaron Boone drove out of Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. I'm really, really pessimistic about baseball starting. I can't see it happening. Rates, I mean, you guys are just talking about it. Rates are going up all over the country. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. I really, really want to see the season happen. I don't care that it's only going to be 60 games. I mean, I don't know if you can tell, I'm from Ireland. And this is the only sport that I like watching over here. To quote you, Michael, I love baseball. And to quote you, Don, football is garbage.
No, he doesn't think football is garbage. He thinks golf is garbage.
I'm manipulating the quote.
Oh.
Football is garbage. Basketball is garbage. All I've got is the Yankees. I watched the Islanders after baseball and until they got knocked out. And I watched the two indigenous Irish sports, hurling and Gaelic football, but they're only at the weekends from...
I don't want to bring your hopes down. We're just talking realities. They're going to try to play, Daniel. They're going to try to play. I mean, this is not for show. They really want to get their sport on the field. They don't want to go all those months and wait for next March where who knows if things are going to be better. They want to play. All the sports want to play. Money's involved. I mean, we're not naive. But they also know the importance for the sport to play. So they know there are going to be positive tests. Are there going to be so many positive tests that it's going to be too much to handle? I think that's what it comes down to. You keep reading about basketball players and hockey players are testing positive. That's before they get to the bubble. Once they get to the bubble, that's a different story. Yeah, they're going to test positive now, but they have plenty of time. We kept asking Don, why are they waiting so long to report? Well, now somebody tests positive, they quarantine for 2 weeks. They're at the bubble, they're at the quarantine situation, then they're fine. That's why they wait so long, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because the reason all these tests, like, what was it, last Friday? Because that's when people started to kind of report to their camps and get ready, and so they get tested, and they get tested positive. I think they anticipated this, and they wanted to make sure that as everybody was coming back, especially in the NHL, from all over the world, because a lot of guys went back to Sweden and Russia and different places around the globe, they knew these guys are going to come back, they're going to test positive, we're going to have to quarantine them for 14 days, and we just need that wiggle room to allow us to then be able to start the season. And the hope is once they get into that hub, everybody is negative going in and stays negative. Baseball and football aren't going to have that luxury.
I'll tell you what, I kind of wondered about it when it was brought up by Jeff Passan all those months ago. I still think the best way to get a season in is to quarantine the players in a controlled environment, and they are doing the complete opposite of that. The complete opposite.
And the players don't want to do it. I guess they wouldn't have agreed to it if they were forced to be quarantined.
But in this unilateral implementation by Rob Manfred, if there is a great spread, he said in the deal – that they have the right to quarantine everybody and play in a hub city. So, but I mean, we were talking about Arizona. Arizona's rates are skyrocketing right now. So I don't think it could be done there. So there's a lot of big ifs in this, and we're trying to give you the ifs, and we're trying to give you the positives of playing as well. But the way I read it from the outside looking in, there's a whole lot more negative than positive aspects of them getting started. And I think a lot of the players are getting a little bit hinky about playing.
Now, can you, like in football, is there a way that you could say, all right, during the football season, you go to the stadium, you go to the hotel, you go home. That's it. It's the only places you're allowed to go. Can't go anywhere else.
I guess, I mean, the league would have to, the Players Association would have to agree to it.
Because Ian Rappaport, I guess there was a conference call with Roger Goodell. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell on a conference call says the plan is to start training camp on time and get ready for games at our stadiums and to engage our fans both in stadiums and through our media partners. Talks ongoing with NFLPA to decide the specifics. So while you're talking to the PA, can you say, all right, well, listen, we can't do a bubble, but what we can do is get you to agree you're allowed three places you can go. The facility, home, the stadium. That's it. Anybody that strays from those places is subject to fine or suspension or quarantine. And if you get the players to do that, would that work? Where a Giant player can only go to basically Giant Stadium, their practice facility, which is in the same parking lot, and home.
You know what would be great, though, in this time, Don? If the Giants were in Albany and the Jets were in Cortland, that would be the perfect thing. That would be like quarantine. You go back to your dorms, and you have to stay there. You're at the facility, you get tested, you go back to the dorm. And Bart Scott has said that your day is so long anyway, you can't even go out. And when you're in Cortland at 10 o'clock, the streets are rolled up anyway. There's not much to do. That's what would really be needed now.
Well, can you do that? The schools aren't open, obviously.
I don't know.
Call up Albany and Cortland and say, can we come up here and do our training camp there? And then all of training camp, that's all they are. That's the only place that they can go. And then when the season starts,
that's a different
MetLife Stadium. For the Jets, they can go to Florham Park. Obviously, that's where they'll practice, and then home. And any player that is caught outside that is subject to fine or suspension, similar to what the tri-state area governors are doing for anybody that goes to Florida. I've got a quarantine for 2 weeks if I go to Florida. Now, that's difficult to do, but yeah, they can trace you.
I read it, though. It's so hard. It's only a law if you get caught. Like, everybody speeds. It's the ones that get caught, they get a ticket. How are they don't have the manpower.
Well, they don't have the manpower, but the NFL certainly has the manpower.
For them,
they've got former FBI agents working for them.
No. The NFL does, but the state of New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey, there's no way.
No.
Somebody could drive from Florida. How are you going to know?
Right, obviously. But there, if you do stumble into, I guess, a security camera that somebody sees, so that you can get in trouble. But I'm saying the NFL can certainly lay the law down on their players. They've got former FBI agents. All these teams have security. They could keep an eye on their players if they want to.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it. I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, this one could be fun, Michael, because you love yourself some television, right?
Oh, yes.
Big fan of television.
Love TV.
And I struggle with this because there's a lot of different shows I can go with in the top five, but I came up with these five top spinoffs.
Top spinoffs.
Yeah. There's so many good ones, so I really struggled with this. So I'm sure this is going to stir the pot a little bit, even with you.
Should I go?
Peter, you have an idea? No? No.
He's walking bare.
Hip Hop Squares was not a good enough spinoff to be in the top five.
Well,
sorry.
It's interesting, Don, because two of the... there's actually three spinoffs from All in the Family.
That's
good
right.
Good Times, The Jeffersons, and Maude. So I'll go with them as a trio. I don't know which one you chose.
You know, it's interesting because Maude is directly a spinoff of All in the Family because it was her cousin. Maude was...
Right.
Why is her name escaping me?
Edith.
Archie and Edith's cousin.
Right.
And then Good Times was a spinoff of Maude because Florida was Maude's maid.
Right. And the Jeffersons were a spinoff from the All in the Family because they lived next door.
So I did not go with Maude or Good Times. I struggled because they were on the list. I've got a list of also-rans that include Maude and Good Times. So not those two, but you just mentioned one of them at the end.
Jeffersons.
And that is the Jeffersons. The Jeffersons were the neighbors of the Bunkers, and the show ran from 1975 to 1985. So I've got the Jeffersons at number five.
Jefferson's just five. Let's see. Okay, this will... I wonder if you went this deep. A spinoff of Love American Style is Happy Days.
Yeah, and I've got Happy Days at number three. Now, Love American Style was a really strange show because it didn't have a cast, right? It just... Every week, it would have new cast members, and they would just... I don't know if you do. How would you explain it, Michael? They would just like do a story
little
or a couple of different
like
stories,
Love Boat.
Little vignettes, and it was always different actors that were involved in it. But then they did do a vignette on Happy Days, and Gary Marshall said that they thought this would be a great show, and they tested it, and it tanked, and so the network didn't want to do it. And then American Graffiti came out. And American
Ron Howard
Graffiti,
blew up.
Right. Ron Howard blew up. The whole 50s nostalgia blew up. And then they tested it again and went through the roof. So if not for American Graffiti, ABC probably doesn't take Happy Days, which ran from 1974 to 1984. And yes, a spinoff of Love American Style. And I've got it at three.
Now, we can also extrapolate from that because spinning off from Happy Days.
Right.
Is Laverne and Shirley and Mork and Mindy.
Right. Well, Mork and Mindy I didn't have make the cut, but I have Laverne and Shirley at four. That ran from 1976 to 1983. Laverne and Shirley were made guest appearances here and there as girlfriends or people that were, you know, women that were, I guess, trying to covet Fonzie and blind dates and all that.
Who didn't covet Fonzie?
No, who didn't? And then that ended up being a show that ran from 76 to 83, and that is number four.
Now,
on
you're such a TV aficionado, Don. In the All-American style vignette of Happy Days, there was a brother. What happened to him? We never saw him in the remaining years.
Well,
did he stay in his room?
Chuck made it to the actual show in 1974, and they had him go off to school, and he just never returned.
And they never mentioned him again.
They never addressed it. They didn't kill him off, but that was it. He was never referred to again. They went from a family of five to a family of four.
I think this might be going off the reservation. I believe that there was something between Mrs. Cunningham and Fonz.
I mean, that would have been a nice spinoff. That certainly would have been better.
No, I mean something going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you would probably put her in the category of...
Smoke Show.
Yes.
How about Frasier, spinning off from Cheers?
I've got Frasier at number two, running from 1993 to 2004. I love that show. Of course, Frasier was a guy that occasionally would pop in at the bar.
And, a lot, more than occasionally.
Yeah, he was there quite a bit, and then he did have a backstory with his wife and everything, and then he moved to Seattle, and then the show took off. And I think that is a terrific show. And what a lot of people maybe don't realize, Michael, we might have talked about this before, do you realize that every episode in which Frasier would take a call on his show, the voice would be a famous person?
I did not know that.
And they would never reveal. If you go somewhere, you can get the list of who it is, but it was pretty significant people like Burt Reynolds and John Cusack, and they would never acknowledge it. It would not be in any of the credits anywhere. You wouldn't find it on IMDb, but every time they would have a caller to his show, it would be somebody of significance.
So we just have one left?
One left, yes.
And it's number one?
And it's number one. You're probably not thinking of it as a spinoff, but it is technically a spinoff.
Boy.
And it is a pretty iconic show. And I'll give you a hint.
Okay. Lou Grant was a spinoff of Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes, I did consider Lou Grant as well, which is also the rarity of spinning off into a serious show.
Right.
And an hour-long show.
Right.
Where he was the editor of a newspaper, and so it went from sitcom to serious show, which doesn't happen too often. The only other time it happened, and this was also kind of a, not the greatest spinoff, but Trapper John M.D.,
right,
which was years later, was
and also
Aftermath. Yeah, well, Aftermath was just awful, and that
trash.
Was actually a sitcom that didn't work out. But this one, if you want, do you want a hint?
Yeah, give me a hint.
All right, it's still on the air.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that The Simpsons are a spinoff from a show.
You would be correct, and it's number one. 1989 to present. Spinoff of the Tracy Ullman Show would be a little vignette cartoon they would do on the Tracy Ullman Show. Made it its own show in 1989 and is still running 30-plus years later. The Simpsons, number one. As I mentioned, I thought about Maude. I thought about Good Times. I thought about Mork and Mindy, Lou Grant. I also thought about Rhoda.
Rhoda is a good call.
Rhoda is very good. It just wasn't on very long. Was on from 74 to 78.
But remember how big a deal it was when Rhoda got married?
Her wedding was through the roof. Phyllis also is a spinoff.
Yep.
Of
the Cloris Leachman vehicle.
Yeah, where she went to San Francisco. Rhoda went back to New York. But those didn't make the cut. So the Jeffersons, number five. Laverne and Shirley, four. Happy Days, three. Frasier, two. The Simpsons, number one.
Now, why aren't we spinning off, you don't think, from Big Bang, like Leonard and Penny?
We have. I mean, I actually even thought about it because it is doing
well.
Very
that's Sheldon.
Well
that's
in the ratings,
a spin
but,
back.
Well, it's a spin, but it's still a spin off. It's a show taken from Big Bang, and it's doing well. Young Sheldon, I think, is doing well. It's entering season three. If we ever go back to sitcoms, Michael, I don't know, because we're not going to be taping any for very long. I mean, I think we're going to be kind of barren television wise coming up in a few months, right? Unless some shows think outside the box and do, like, Zoom shows.
Yeah, it's tired. I'm done with the Zoom shows. Done, I say.
Are you even with Saturday Night Live? You're done with that, too?
I thought they did a good job, but, like, you know, when they did the Parks and Rec one, I mean, I'm looking forward to the 30 Rock one, but you're limited in what you could do.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all cool when it's first happening, but now you're going, I want back to normal, and we're not close to back to normal.
Well, there's so many throwback shows, too, right? Like I watch Young Sheldon. That's thrown back from the 80s. And the same with the Goldbergs. That's thrown back from the 80s. School's thrown back from the 90s. They can't do Zoom shows because there was no Zoom back then. Heck, I didn't even know Zoom existed until 3 months ago, to be honest with you.
And now you can't live without it.
We should have invested a lot of money in Zoom when this whole thing took place. So.
Little did we know. We should have invested a lot in Amazon because that's one company that's doing well during all of this. You ever notice how much everything is packed, overly packed in an Amazon package? I mean, they're killing trees at a rate I can't even understand.
Well, that's no, but you said that the packages are overpacked. You mean?
I mean, like everything is packed and packed and I mean, the boxes are so big, even if you order something small.
Oh, I thought you were just because we got an Amazon order. Nancy had gotten some stuff from Target, and they loaded like 30 different things into one box. She thought that they forgot us. But everything was like in one big, huge box.
Well, that's a good list, Don.
Thank you. I
enjoyed it.
Now, do you think Peter would have been able to throw any out there?
Who knows? Maybe I mean, Frasier. You can't think along with that guy. You have no idea. He doesn't follow our protocol. He just doesn't.
Hot dog!
You know who I want to talk to right now?
Who's that?
Because we had on Larry Brown. And of all of our varied listeners out there, I would think that Spike in New Jersey enjoyed that interview more than most. Spike, am I right?
I think you're right.
You're 100% correct. First, I want to make a comment on your opening monologue, and then we'll get to the fun part. I was very moved again by it, and I don't get it, Michael. You're 59, Don. you're 53, maybe 52, two.
52.
Yeah, I don't get it. I'll be 74 in a few weeks. And by the way, the call to Harry yesterday was just I was in tears. It was so beautiful.
We're going to call you up on your 97th birthday.
We are.
God willing. And I'll call you on your 98th.
Okay, good.
That'll be the Tales from the Crypt, right? Okay, anyway.
That was a great line.
Okay. Very good, Spike.
So, yeah, I'm feeling good because I heard Larry. But I just want to finish my thought. Thank you for the time. I'm so disenchanted, as Joe Pesci said, and I say this often, with the youths. 29%, Murphy came out and said, New Jersey, are new cases of 22% of kids 29 and under. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And I feel for you, Michael, and Don, your young fathers, I see the strain and stress, and this 4 hours is as good for you as it is for us. And I don't miss a minute. I just don't. I won't sacrifice that. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
That heartfelt public service message. Now, Larry Brown, Noah's family, Herbie, his older brother, was kind of the pseudo-assistant coach in Detroit. Woody was, Mike Woodson. And Herbie went to the Maccabee games. He coached the Israeli team. But when he played in North Carolina, he played, listen to this team, with Donnie Walsh, Billy Cunningham, and Doug Moe. And a couple of guys, the Charlie Schaffer, you probably never heard of, but a guy named Yogi Potit. They're just guys I remember. I was probably, Larry 79, I'll be 74. So it was a five-year swing, so I was a teenager. And we got to go down and watch the games. Larry's a local kid, and his mother was alive up until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, she lived to about 100, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It was wonderful. And you're so on the money about saying, why not? I spoke to whoever I spoke to today. I think the DCR you call it now. They got all these guys upstairs now. You got, what's the first guy? You got the World Wide West. You
right.
got, what's the image guy they brought in?
Stout.
And then you got the new guy, the kid from, all kids to me, from Philly. He's in the Jewish Hall of Fame in Philadelphia. The new guy in charge.
Zirin, I think. Oh, Leon Rose.
Leon Rose.
Yeah.
You got three guys. You got four other guys, you and I, who know basketball inside out, never heard of. And then you got a bunch of other guys. And you got two players that are keepers. So it's a little ass backwards, the way they're approaching this. So with two assets and a boatload of draft picks, why not bring in Larry Brown? Put all these brainiacs together, put them in there, and let's make a deal. You know,
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, to pick Larry's brain, it would be invaluable, and he's close with all of these guys. Here's an unbelievable story that I read today, Don. You know how Leon Rose got to know William Wesley?
How?
He lived in Philly, Leon Rose. He went into, it was not a Foot Locker, but it was a shoe store, to buy sneakers. And William Wesley waited on him. And they became friends, and he thought that, you know, Wesley was really smart and sharp, and they developed a rapport. And all these years later, now they're running the Knicks. Kind of a neat story. And they never had known each other. They just Leon Rose walked into a sneaker store, and the guy waiting on him was William Wesley, who became World Wide Wes.
Wow.
Amazing.
No, that's...
It's like I always like the butterfly effect. Well, like, right. If you, like, just blink your eye...
That's right.
In a different way, like 20 years ago, your whole life would be different.
Yeah, and that's amazing, the networking that goes on.
So do you think that Andrew is up for a real solid hosting of Last One Standing?
Well, you got to ask, like, two questions the last time, and I blew it, remember? When the last time that he did this.
And also, I mean, let's really lift the curtain. He writes all the questions for Peter.
Right, so this is really getting rid of some fat, to be honest with you.
Come on, dog.
Like, this is a good steak, but we're getting rid of the excess fat and throwing in the guy that does all the work. Let's be honest.
I didn't know you wanted to go there, but I'm glad you did. Anyway,
I don't mean fat like that he's fat, but you know.
What kind of steak was it? You seem like a bone-in guy.
The part of the steak that you don't like.
Oh, I hate the fat. I hate, like, Jody buys these steaks, like, with fat around it. And I go, what are you doing? She goes, it adds flavor. I said, I'd rather have more meat than the flavor. Stop it. I don't buy into that. It gives flavor. I'll put salt on if I want flavor.
Ooh.
That's as close as we come to a fight.
Okay. It sounded heated.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Two opponents enter.
I hate Don.
I'm Don LaGreca, sidekick to Michael K.
Only one makes it out.
Let's go with Don!
Who will win this daily competition where the standings don't matter?
What?
We find out.
Okay.
In the latest edition of Last One Standing.
Yes, it is. Last one standing. Peter is off today. I will be filling in for him today and tomorrow as we head into a crucial day for Last One Standing. Michael is up, I believe, 2-1. Don, you are correct. Need of a win. Yes, Don in need of a win to keep the week alive. Don, before we get to Last One Standing, while it's on my mind, I did want to make one suggestion for your top five. I was wondering if you considered Better Call Saul, a spinoff from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I saw that a lot of people. I've never seen the show. I don't know the show. So it's only been out for a couple of years, though, right?
I think it's had five seasons.
Really?
Now, Andrew, I've heard that Better Call Saul is better than Breaking Bad. Is that true?
So I'm not going to lie. I've never seen either of them. Oh, but okay. I know that there are some people that think that. I don't know if that's the common opinion. But I know Better Call Saul was nominated for Best Drama Series last year and this year. It didn't win last year. Game of Thrones did. But I know it's held in a pretty high regard as far as spinoffs go.
You know, it's just an honor to be nominated, Andrew.
That's what they say.
That's not what I
but
say.
At any rate, I'm. But yeah, I figured I was seeing that on Twitter too. I figured I would throw that in there. But let's do a little Last One Standing. Know who am I today? We'll go with straight up trivia questions.
Okay, and so who goes first?
So I decided that we just continue with where we left off from who was supposed to go first the other day, because who am I don't count as a day of who goes first or second. So I believe Don is first.
Okay.
All right, here is your first question. Don, in 1993, a 46-year-old Nolan Ryan put this then 26-year-old in a headlock and punched him repeatedly during a brawl.
That would be Robin Ventura, final answer.
Hi, Robin.
Robin Ventura, that is correct. We move over to Michael now. All right, Michael. Mm-hmm. This wide receiver caught the game-winning touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone for the Pittsburgh Steelers in Super Bowl 43 against the Arizona Cardinals.
Santonio Holmes, final answer.
That is correct. One of the greatest, probably one of the greatest catches in the history of the Super Bowl. Santonio Holmes, future Jet.
Yeah, the pick six right. Kind of obscured that. Otherwise, I think it'd probably be remembered more iconically.
What do you mean the pick six?
Who was it done?
Harrison.
The Steeler? The Harrison that was 96 yard interception return for a touchdown?
To end the first half.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We continue now, Don.
Yes,
it's
going to
be a football question for you as well. The Jets beat the Colts 17-16 in the 2010 AFC wildcard game thanks to a 32-yard field goal as time expired by this kicker.
I guess it would be – I don't even remember Nick Falk as being the kicker that year. So I think it's Nick Falk, final answer.
Folk hero.
Yeah.
That's right. It is Nick Folk. And so we continue back to Michael now. All right, here we go. In horse racing's Triple Crown, Affirmed won it in 1978, and then no one won again until this horse in 2015.
Oh. Oh, this is a killer. I think I'm wrong, but Foolish Pleasure.
is that the name of a horse?
Yeah.
Did you just make up a horse name?
No, that's the name of Foolish Pleasure.
Oh, well, that is not the answer. I'm sorry, Michael. You're going to kick yourself when you hear it, because I know you do know it. It was
American Pharaoh.
What was it?
American Pharaoh.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten it. No, I don't even. You know, I'm good, as Don would say.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting because I didn't want to interrupt and break up his train of thought. I thought he knew and just couldn't remember because he is a horse racing fan.
No, no. I know now that he said it, but it definitely would not have been on my radar. I wouldn't have been able to get it. I'm not that bright. So I'm good, as Don says.
And it's tough because it is a question where you can't picture the horse, right? That doesn't help.
They all look alike to me.
And there isn't a school.
Well, there you go.
Like with
I was hoping when you said affirm that, you know, who finished second at all the races, I would have thrown out Alidar and I would have been good. But you go with who's the...
I would have thought Alidar would have been a more difficult question than American
Pharoah. Not to me.
I guess not. I am looking up Foolish Pleasure now.
Foolish Pleasure was a great horse.
Yeah, he won the 1975 Kentucky Derby.
While we have you on the 1975?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So you were a little bit off.
Wow. A little off. but he, I think he was the daddy of some really good horses too. He became a pretty good sire.
Yeah.
From what I'm hearing, Andrew, and since we have you on, there's a pretty significant soccer game going on that people are commenting on Twitter. Are you watching?
I am, yeah. Wow, and for it to be
what's
on your radar.
Name? Pulisic?
Christian Pulisic. He's an American, American.
I saw a goal that he scored, and even Frank Isola said, this is an American against a top-flight team doing what he just did.
Yeah, it is happening. Like, he is now – he's been highly thought of for a long time, for a number of years, and this is his first year with Chelsea, who are a really high-profile club in the English Premier League, and he was hurt for part of the season. He showed flashes a little bit. He had a hat trick earlier in the year, which was a huge deal for an American to do. Then he got hurt, though, and now he's back and he's healthy, and he scored an amazing goal earlier, and he just came literally millimeters from scoring a second one. And it's a game of huge significance because if Chelsea either win or tie this game against Manchester City, then Liverpool will win their first title in 30 years, which is very significant because they're one of
the historic
clubs.
Now, is that the team that's owned by John Henry?
It is, yeah.
Wow.
Deep. Andrew, full in soccer mode, he went millimeters instead of inches.
Now, this guy's going to be somebody with – it's Pulisic, right?
Pulisic.
Pulisic?
Right, Andrew?
Honestly, I hear both. I usually say Christian Pulisic.
Okay.
But I've, just, I've heard
I have to know because
ways.
We'll be talking about him.
You
Where's
think
he
so?
From in the States?
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Yeah.
We've all been there, right? You went there, right, Michael?
I don't think I've ever been to Hershey, Pennsylvania.
You never took the kids?
No. Do you know that Jody, when she got out of college, performed at Hershey Park? And you're going to laugh, and you're not going to believe me, was a Dolly Parton impersonator.
Really? Now,
if you hear her, well, no, she had help up top.
That's what I was going to
But she, when she sings like nine, to, I mean, you think it's Dolly Parton.
Hey, listen, if this pandemic continues, I suggest that we get her on to do just that.
Just sing 9 to 5 as Dolly. Does she have
right.
to do, does she need the enhancements or are you okay?
No, I don't need the enhancements. I just want to hear the beautiful voice. That's all.
Oh, Jody's got an unbelievable voice. It's so funny. She sings so great, and every time she sings in the house, Callie goes, "Stop, you're awful."
What?
That's what children do.
Also a very underrated movie, 9 to 5.
Yes. Dabney Coleman, I believe.
Vehicle. Dabney Coleman is tremendous in everything he's in.
That's strong. So, Andrew, good job on Last One Standing, throwing a horse racing question, which Peter would never have asked.
Yeah, I'm sorry that. Now it all comes down to tomorrow, right? It's 2-2 heading into
Friday,
right. So we've got everything to play for tomorrow.
That's what it's all about.
Why don't you? Why don't you have tomorrow be a Who Am I? Because I love those.
I did just refresh it with some new ones.
All right.
We'll see.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway. to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.